Appreciate everyone's presence this morning. It's good to see Mark Del Toro. I haven't seen yet, so it's good to see Mark. And it's good to see everyone, and I always feel like we've got our kindred spirits here in Del Rio, and so we always enjoy when we go back up to Dallas and let them know that the brethren are doing okay there. Our brothers and sisters in Del Rio are doing well. And we do want you to know that this congregation has been in the prayers at the Pleasant Run Church of Christ. And, we often try to make mention of you and the work that you're doing here and the great work that you have to do. And so our prayers are with you up in the Dallas area. And when I mentioned that we're wanting to come down and do some lessons and try to do some work here, they said, go. Go do the work, yeah. And so we're fortunate there at Pleasant Run to have people that stand in at a moment's notice to preach and teach and do other things. And so we have been blessed in the work that we have to do there. But again, our prayers are with the congregation here. Their prayers are with you. And we're all laboring together in all of this. So y'all are laboring here in Del Rio, and everything that you're going through here and the struggles that you're having here, the challenges you're having here, we're having up there in Dallas, and that all churches are having everywhere, especially those who are doing their very best to remain faithful to the Word of God. That will always present challenges, but we can rise to those challenges. We've been talking about life under the sun, and we've been saying a lot about, of course, the struggles and the difficulties. In the very first illustration that was presented, you have this individual out laboring in a field, and it's hot and it's toilsome work, and he's working and working and working, and he makes what he can make. He goes home, has to wake up, and he does it all over again. You just kind of go through this cycle of work and work. Okay, I eat, and I try to save what I can. But sooner or later, I'm going to die, and that's it. That's life under the sun, to sum things up. And when you read through the book of Ecclesiastes, that as these arguments are being made, and you keep seeing this phrase, vanity of vanities, all is vanity, and that's the refrain of most of the book, and you're reading through that thinking, this is depressing. And this isn't making me feel any better about life to think that I'm just going to work and work and work, and then I might give what I earn to a fool. I'm going to lose everything I work for, and I can be the smartest person in the world and the strongest, and I can earn the most, and I'm still going to die with the fool and the poor man and the dog in the dirt. I can understand how one can go through this and think, man, this is all just very, it's a downer. This is life, and it is life. It is life under the sun. And this is life for people that this all they have is their physical body, and all they have is what they earn in their jobs and their professions and their status in the world. This is life, and it is depressing. If that's all that life is to you, life under the sun. But we want to look at some things right now. Life is not all about labor and toil. It's not all about looking forward to death and darkness. Then we want to look at a couple of things right now. Ecclesiastes chapter 9. and reading beginning in verse 7. Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and verse 7. He says, "Go eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has already accepted your works. Let your garments always be white, and let your head lack no oil. Live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life, which he has given you under the sun, all your days of vanity." And he points to the fact that all of these good things we have to enjoy, that they're things that we enjoy in this vain life under the sun. But he says, enjoy them. Enjoy them, for that is your portion in life and in the labor which you perform under the sun. And under the sun, we all get a different portion. We all get different portions of talent, abilities, and we all get different portions of earnings, what we get from the work that we do. And some work very, very hard and are very smart and very talented, and they don't make much. And some do hardly any work and are not very talented. They seem to make a lot of money. And you got everything in between. But he's saying, whatever your portion is, whether it's a little or a lot, enjoy it. That's your portion, what you have received under the sun. And so we need, as Christians, to enjoy life. All good things are from God. All of these good things, all the pleasures we enjoy are from God, that he's given us to enjoy. Friendship. If you've got one friend in the whole wide world, you need to thank God and be glad you have a friend. And enjoy being able to have that friendship with someone else. But I imagine most of us have more than just one friend. But what a blessing in life, friendship, to be able to walk side by side with one, with someone else, and to share interests, to be able to call one another, be able to talk to each other about life, to be able to enjoy life together. Friendship is a blessing from God, and we need to enjoy it. We talked about work. If God gave you some talent, some work that you're able to do, that you ought to enjoy the work and enjoy the fruits of that labor. I don't know what your lunch plans are today, but when you sit down to eat a meal this afternoon, say a prayer to God, thank you for this food, and enjoy whatever food God has given you to eat. And I imagine that most of us, I don't know if there's anybody in here this afternoon who's going to go home, or you're just going to find some crackers or something on the street, and that's going to be your lunch. I imagine most of us are going to have a decent meal. And you need to enjoy it and thank God that you have something to eat. Whether it's a little or whether it's a lot. Whether it's fried or baked, whether it's stew, whatever it is, enjoy that portion in life that God has given you. If you have a television show you like, enjoy watching your television shows. Enjoy it. And don't feel guilty all the time unless you're binge watching. That's another issue. But if you got a television show that you enjoy watching every once in a while and you like to relax, we were sitting back watching I Love Lucy yesterday evening. And it's funny. It's funny. When was that made? 40s, 50s?
I think before you.
Yeah, way before me. They don't make shows like that anymore. It's funny. And we sat back and we laughed. I think the dog may have laughed a couple of times. Enjoy your television shows. Enjoy good movies. Play games on your phone if you like to play games. You know what? Take a nap every once in a while. Sleep. Rest. God has given us work to do, but God also said, hey, you got to work, but you got to rest. Enjoy a nap from time to time. Enjoy sleep. Enjoy recreation. You enjoy fishing? hunting, whatever it is, enjoy it. This is our portion under the sun. If you have kids, if you don't have kids. If you have children, thank God, enjoy them. If you don't have kids, maybe you might want to thank God. Enjoy that you don't have kids. Whatever your portion is, enjoy it. It is your gift from God under the sun. If you're retired and you don't necessarily have to be in a job somewhere, enjoy that. That is your season in life that God has given you to enjoy. But this is life under the sun, and we have to be reminded that any of these pleasures that we have in life, you cannot take them with you. You won't be taking any of these pleasures with you. This is life under the sun. And so after all this, and we've gone through some of these lessons, and we've looked at some points and highlights from the book of Ecclesiastes, so what are we to make of all this? What conclusions do we come to? And so let's go toward the end of this great book in Ecclesiastes chapter 11. Ecclesiastes chapter 11 and verse 7. And one conclusion we come to is that we ought to enjoy life. He says, "Truly the light is sweet and it is pleasant for the eyes to behold the sun. But if a man lives many years and rejoices in them all, yet let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. All that is coming is vanity." And he says, "Truly the light is sweet." And that sun, especially during the summer, it can get hot. But what a blessing it is to be able to see the light of the sun, to feel the heat on your back, to enjoy the sun and everything that it does. Yes, it's hot, but we can't forget that we need the sun, and we need the sun to be doing exactly what it does during the summer. This is appointed by God. But the light of the sun, to be able to see light, this is sweet. But if you were to live 110 years, he says, be mindful of the fact that the darkness is coming. And he'll have more to say about those dark days. That all that is coming, he says, under the sun, all that is coming is vanity. In verse 9, Ecclesiastes 11 and verse 9, he says, "Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you. In the days of your youth, walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes. But know this, that for all these things God will bring you into judgment. Therefore, remove sorrow from your heart and put away evil from your flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity." Speaking to the youth, he says, rejoice and enjoy the days of youth and childhood. And it's hard for me to remember a time when I didn't have bills to pay. It's hard to remember a time when there were no duties, no responsibilities, and to be like a little child where it seems like life is just going from one fun thing to the next. And it should just be fun and enjoyable all the time. It's hard to remember back to those days, but there is a warning here. There is a warning. He says, childhood and youth are vanity, that you will not remain young forever. And I sometimes watch our kids as Sarah's in the kitchen and she's working in the kitchen, and I see the kids playing on the floor and they're playing with cars or something like that. And I have these flashbacks of when I was doing the exact same thing, playing on the kitchen floor with my cars, and my mom was there in the kitchen. And it just, I mean, I can almost see it as though it was yesterday. And I think, where did all those 40 or so years go? and what happened to my childhood, my youth? It's gone, never to be recovered. And the wise man is saying, for those who are young, that you ought to enjoy this period in your life, this time of your life. But know this, that it is vain. It's vain. And I wish there were some better way of explaining this to young people. I wish there were some better way of conveying this point to our youth, that you must prepare yourself for a time when you will no longer be young. And life will no longer be about playing and enjoying life and just always just having fun with little or no responsibility. And I just wish there was some better way to communicate to our young people. That in your mind, you at some point must mature. And that you must realize that I am no longer in that season of my life. That now I'm transitioning into a different season where I am responsible, not just for myself, but I may be responsible for others. And God has put me in a place where I need to find work to do, that I need to work. Again, I wish there were a better way to communicate that, but we need to teach this to our young people and remind them and try our best to communicate this idea to them. That enjoy being young, but childhood and youth are vanity. In Ecclesiastes chapter 12, Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 1. He says, remember now your Creator in the days of your youth. Remember your Creator. Before the difficult days come and the years draw near when you say, I have no pleasure in them. And this is emphasizing the physical pleasures in life. And we as believers recognize that there are pleasures far beyond and far greater than just our physical pleasures in life. But he says, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Before those difficult days come and the years come, when you say, I have no material, physical pleasure in life. That is when those pleasures are diminished. While the sun and the light, the moon and the stars are not darkened, and the clouds do not return after the rain. Physical pleasure, the material pleasures in life are fleeting and they are vain. They're vain. And he says, know this. Learn this great knowledge. Apply this great wisdom. Remember and come seek your Creator in the days of your youth and prepare yourself for a time when you transition beyond just enjoying your physical, material life and enjoying your youth. Whether we're young or old, we do need to thank God for whatever pleasures we have in life. And if we can see the light of the sun and we can enjoy the stars at night, and we can go outside and take a deep breath and enjoy simply being able to breathe, that these are pleasures that God has given us. But all the gifts under the sun are vanity. And as we prepare to look at the following passage is a poetic illustration of this gradual decline of the physical body and the gradual diminishing of physical pleasure. And it uses this imagery of this decaying house. And it says, talking about these days that are coming. It says in verse 3, it says, in that day when the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men bow down, when the grinders cease because they are few, and those that look through the windows grow dim. The keepers of the house, referring to the bones and the limbs that begin to tremble and weaken in older age, and the stooping over of the body. And talking about the grinders, one's teeth, it says that those teeth will become few and far, far apart. Talking about those teeth. And it becomes more difficult to chew and to eat food and to take those kinds of pleasure. And he talks about when those that look through the windows grow dim. That is a weakening of the eyes. Telling you, you can eat some good food now. Enjoy being able to chew and eat good food. And if you can see the light of the sun, however good your eyesight is, you know, if I take these off, I mean, I can barely tell Troy from Judah. Well, it's not that bad. It's pretty blurry when I take off my glasses. But, you know, when I take them off, I can still see people. I can still see images. And so if you've got any kind of eyesight whatsoever, thank God for this, because we all recognize that there comes a time when the vision begins to weaken. In verse 4, he says, again, following this illustration, when the doors are shut in the streets and the sound of grinding is low, when one rises up at the sound of a bird, and all the daughters of music are brought low. When one rises up at the sound of the bird, good sleep. We talked about enjoying good sleep. And the older I get, the more I recognize how true all of this is that the older you get, the harder it is to get a good night's sleep. I mean, these kids, when they're out, they're out. And you see them, and you can pick them up, and you can hold them by one arm and dangle them around, and they're just dead asleep. They won't wake up. And I wake up if I hear a cricket outside the window. You know, I wake up at the slightest sound. Is there a raccoon in the attic again? Is there somebody outside the house? Is there something wrong with my health? You know, you wake up and for whatever reason, your heart's racing or something, and something doesn't feel right. And it's hard to get a good night's sleep. One rises at the sound of a bird. And when we wake up earlier, sometimes you wake up in the middle of the night for reasons. But to enjoy a good night's sleep, to enjoy rest, is something that this is something that is vain. It's part of living life under the sun. He talks about when the daughters of music are brought low, our ears wear out. There's music that you enjoy listening to. I mean, Mark and I were just talking about this. If you enjoy listening to music, enjoy listening to that, because there will come a time. Come a time when all sound is silenced to you, and you'll no longer have those pleasures. But God has given us music and sounds to enjoy. In verse 5, he says, also they are afraid of height and of terrors in the way. When the almond tree blossoms, the grasshopper is a burden, and desire fails. For man goes to his eternal home, and the mourners go about the streets. In childhood and youth, it seems like one is not afraid of anything. I've watched Titus jump from one piece of furniture to another, and I'm watching him jump, and I'm thinking, I shouldn't let him do that. And I'm just watching him do it. And it just seems like he has no fear whatsoever. And he'll fall, and he'll hurt himself, and he'll cry, and he'll get a bruise or a scar. And then 20 minutes later, he's doing the same thing. No fear. But as we age, he says that they are afraid of height. They're afraid of the terrors and the way. And I just watch, you know, kids do some things and I almost cringe watching and thinking, man, if I tried to do that, woe is me. And there was a time when I used to play soccer when I was in college. And I went, you know, a short time ago, we went and watched, and we're watching these college kids play soccer. And I'm watching them. I'm thinking, these kids are crazy. I mean, the jumping up and the headers and the bicycle kicks and the diving and the sliding. And you know, part of me thinks, yeah, I could probably still hang with them, right? I could go out here and run with these kids. And then the other part of me is saying, are you crazy? Do you want to be hospitalized to try to go out here and run around with these young kids? That the body just can't do those things anymore. It's all vanity. And sooner or later, that those young kids, if they live long enough, that they will get to a season in their lives where they're looking back. That these are all the appointed seasons and times, but God has given us these things to enjoy them while we have them. But the author is trying to emphasize here that they are all vain, fundamentally vain. At some point, you have to move on. In this passage, it talks about the blossoming almond tree. I would say likely referring to the whitening of the hair, but I'm not absolutely certain about that. But it's absolutely certain that the point is made that looks are vanity. And that you can look as good as you want. If you look good in certain clothes and to have your face made up a certain way in certain shoes or whatever it is, that look good if you want to look good. But prepare yourself. Because dresses that you look good in now might not look so good in 20 or 30 years from now. You know, shirts, you know, men, some of these shirts, they're not for all ages. And so certain shirts that you think you look good in now, you may not look so good in 20 or 30 years. And certain pants that you wear, and it's almost, you almost feel sorry for, you think about some women when they reach a certain age and they're still trying to put on the same kind of makeup they put on in their 20s. They're 60 or 70 years old, it doesn't look the same. And the point that's being made here is that our looks, our physical looks, our physical bodies, it's all vain. Youth is vanity. All of these physical things about us fade and change. Except for my wife, Sarah. I can honestly tell you, she looks exactly the same to me as she did when we got married. I mean, I don't know if it's in my head or what, but she looks exactly the same. And I'm not trying to win points or anything, but that's how she looks. But the key point here in verse 5, he says, there will come a time when desire fails and man will go to his eternal home. In verse 6, he says, remember your creator before the silver cord is loosed or the golden bowl is broken or the pitcher shattered at the fountain or the wheel broken at the well. And this is another passage with the illustration that there is some disagreement about what each of these terms or these items represents or illustrates, but it's still a beautiful and it's a moving illustration and it makes its point. You have a silver cord, right? A silver cord. And you have this golden bowl. And a wheel well, or a well wheel. A pitcher. The imagery is of something that is of great value, right? And you have this silver cord that's cut or loosed. And imagine having this beautiful golden bowl, right? And it's broken. were shattered, the pitcher that shattered. And you have something that was at some time of value and use, and it's rendered valueless or useless. And that golden bowl, it's just shattered and broken. And so are our physical bodies and our lives. To see somebody in good physical health, somebody who can do physical work, somebody who's strong and healthy, a young man or a young woman, they've got beautiful hair, they look good, but at some point all of that just starts to break down. And all of that which the world sees as having value is shattered and broken, like that golden bowl, like that silver cord. And so our physical bodies and the pleasures associated with it are reduced in the final days of our lives. In verse 7, it says, Then the dust will return to the earth as it was. All of your physical body, all of you, your brain, your teeth, your arms, everything about you, made from the dust of the earth. And it says that the dust, that dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. And we recall from Genesis chapter 2, Recall from Genesis chapter 2 and verse 7 that God made man from the dust of the earth and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. That, my friend, all you are is, you're just made of this earth, the dust, the very name Adam. Adam, simply referring to the clay of which he was made. And that's all your physical body is. Dust. And so much so that when somebody dies, what do? We bury them. And guess what? If you don't bury them and you just let them lay out there, what happens to them? The body returns to the dust. And if any one of us were to die out here in the street, let's imagine you just died out in the street and nobody paid any attention to you, and people just walk right past you. Guess what? In a year, 2 years, 3 years, then your body would no longer be there. It would decay. It would return to the earth of which it was made. And this is life under the sun. When that spirit leaves that body, you have corruption and decay. In verse 8, what does he say? In verse 8, vanity of vanity, says the preacher, all is vanity. All is vanity. All the glories of man, everything that we do and everything that we work for and everything that we accomplish or don't accomplish in this life, all is vanity. To work so hard for this automobile, this car, and we drive this car around and we enjoy this car, and that car will be snatched away from you in due time. Whatever kind of house you live in, to work years and people save up. I remember I saw a Facebook post recently, and they were talking about, well, we learned to save our money. And you should save your money, by the way. But they were saying, my dad taught me to save my money, and now here's a picture of this big house that we're building. And it's a beautiful house that they're building. Up on a hill, out in the wilderness. They've got so much acreage. We saved our money, and look at our house that we're buying. Let me tell you, if you want a big house, work hard and get a big house. But know this, somebody else is going to live in that house. And there will be a day when you are, when you move out, or you will be moved out of that house. And there may come a day when that house burns down. And there will come a day in 10 or 15, 20, 100 years from now, somebody will walk by that place where you worked so hard to save up for that house, and somebody will walk by and never know there was a house there. And as I run around Del Rio, and there were some places, and I look and say, there was a house right there, and now it's a slab. Or it's just an empty lot. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. I want you to think about, how much money do you have in your bank account? How much money do you have right now sitting at Wells Fargo or USAA? How much money is sitting in there right now? And why is that money there? And I want you to think about the fact that all is vanity. Somebody else is going to get your money. Might be your kids, might not. And something may happen tomorrow in the financial world, and that money is taken away from you. The bank might say, you know what? This is my money. All is vanity. And when they lay you in the grave, they're not going to pile all your money in there with you. Vanity of vanity, all is vanity. We're talking about life under the sun. And the author, as he goes through this great book, and he's asking this question, well, what does it all amount to? Life under the sun. You know what the answer is? Absolutely nothing. When it comes to life under the sun, life separate and apart from God, just living an earthbound life and living about this world, that it all amounts to nothing. I think Shakespeare had some words about that. Life is just a fleeting shadow. It's a player who struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. And we were just saying that, Mike. They knew what the Bible said. Shakespeare knew what was in the Bible. And his audiences knew. And they recognized these great truths. It all amounts to nothing. He said he struts his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. And the image is of one, you're in a play, right? And you get this role in this play and you're up there and everybody's watching you and you're saying your lines and there's this moving performance and everything is wonderful. There's music and you're in this play. But then guess what? The play ends, and the curtain falls, and you get off the stage, and you're heard no more. You're heard no more. And some people work so hard for a legacy. They say, I just want a legacy. I want to leave something in this world. I want to be remembered. And we haven't talked about this passage. The book of Ecclesiastes says, even the very memory of them is forgotten. That there will come a time when not only people will forget your works, but you will be forgotten in this world. Those who remembered you will be forgotten. It all amounts to nothing. Except one thing. It's not just that there is more to life than all of this earthbound pleasure and activity. The reality is that there is a God who gave us the breath of life. There is a God who gave us life and a God who gave us an eternal purpose. And the author says that God has put eternity in their hearts. God gave us an eternal purpose. And this is where our hearts and our minds ought to be set. That yes, you have a starting point here, and you live and you work, and then there's an ending point here, but there is a God who is outside of all of that, who gave us an eternal God, who gave us an eternal purpose. And he's telling us that your life and your existence and your purpose is not limited to what happens between here and here. He says in your life and your purpose that there are things that happened before you began. And even before the foundation of the world that you are living your life for. And that there are things that are going to take place after your life is over and after this world is gone that you are living for. An eternal purpose that he has given all of mankind. And when our lives are over, that is not the end. And the text says that when the spirit leaves the body, where does it go? It returns to God who gave it to do whatever with that spirit, with that soul, that he pleases. One final verse. Then the lesson is yours. One final verse. Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 13. My friends, fools believe that everything starts with birth here in this world and everything ends with death. A fool believes that. But we who believe in God and we who believe in judgment, we know better. In Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 13, he says, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment. God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. This is proper perspective on life. This is how life ought to be viewed through these lens. We ask these questions: who am I? Why am I here? What am I doing in life? What am I doing here in this world? What is my purpose in life? There it is. There it is. To seek God, to fear him, and to keep his commandments. And for one who recognizes that there is a God, and recognizes that he did reveal to us his will in his word, that it begs the question, what are the commandments? For somebody to read this and say, fear God, keep his commandments. What commandments? What commandments? Well, I've got the word of God right here. Let me study and let me find out what God has commanded. Because this is my purpose, to make sure that I am in keeping with his commandments. This is knowledge. This is wisdom. And it ought to guide our every step, every decision you make in life. It ought to help you form your words when you speak to others. It ought to help you form your attitudes and your approaches with others and dealing with others. Because back of everything that you do and everything that you are, you have this mandate, this purpose. Everything I do, say, and think, I need to make sure that there is a fear of God and that whatever it is, I am in keeping with his commandments. And so, if you're doing well in life and you're making good money like you wanted to make, thank God, fear him, and make sure you're keeping his commandments in whatever you're doing with the money you have and with the life you have. If you're not doing well, if you're not making the money that you want, and let me tell you, most people don't. We're taught by the world that you pursue your goals and you accomplish your goals in life under the sun. But guess what? Everybody else is trying to accomplish the same goals. We're like monkeys trying to climb and get to the top of the mountain, and very few are going to get to the top. And meanwhile, we're all fighting with one another, trying to get up there, and the world is telling us, you're going to accomplish every goal that you set in life. You're going to make all the money. All you have to do is work hard for it. Guess what? Everybody else is working hard. Well, there are a lot of other people working hard for the same money that you're trying to get, for the same positions, the same jobs, the same careers. Not everybody's going to get it. And so we ought to know better that there is something more to life than to accomplishing worldly goals. And if you're at a point where you say, you know what, I didn't make the money, I didn't get to where I want to get, so what? Fear God and keep His commandments. That is your duty if you're young and healthy. If you're a young person and you're healthy and you feel like you got your looks, you've got your whole life ahead of you, that's wonderful. That's your season in life. Fear God, keep His commandments. And if you're older, I'm not going to say old, but if you're older and you pick up a picture of yourself and you look at that picture and say, man, who is that? Who is that person? And you're looking at the clothes you're wearing in that picture and saying, I will never again in my life be able to wear those clothes. I will never be able to do my hair that way. I'll never be able to wear that makeup. Whatever it is, and you've reached this season in your life where you're saying, I can never go back there. Maybe you've got some medications you have to take. Maybe you've got some doctor's appointments. And there are physical struggles. And you recognize that there are some physical pleasures in life. You're no longer in that season. Guess what? So what? Fear God and keep His commandments. This is your duty at whatever season in life you're in. If you're white, fear God, keep His commandments. If you're black, fear God, keep His commandments. Hispanic, Asian, it doesn't matter your background, your culture, your duty, your responsibility is the same, that God gave all people. Fear God, keep My commandments. If you're a Republican, fear God and keep His commandments. If you're a Democrat, do your best. Fear God, keep His commandments. If you're a Libertarian, if you're a Green, whatever you are, whatever your political association, you must absolutely make sure in your political activity, the way you vote, whatever you are doing, that you must fear God and keep His commandments, regardless of what the party is doing. Fear God, keep His commandments. If you're married, fear God and keep His commandments. If you're divorced, fear God, keep His commandments. If you have kids, if they're good kids, if they're bad kids, you fear God, keep His commandments. This is our whole duty. And whatever time and chance in this life throws at us, whatever season of life that we're in, regardless of what others are doing around us, our duty is to live our lives mindful of the fact that there is a God in heaven and we have a responsibility toward Him. Your first and foremost responsibility in your life under the sun is toward your God and Creator, not to your friends, not to your spouse, not to your government. Your first and foremost responsibility is that you answer to God and you fear Him above friends and family and government. You fear God and you keep His commandments. And when we've done all of that, and we've done our very best, then my friends, we have lived the most meaningful life, the most successful life that one can live in this world under the sun. Maybe there's one here listening this morning, and maybe this morning, or maybe through the course of these studies, that you've been awakened. You've been awakened to the fact that you have a personal responsibility toward your God and Creator that you have not been keeping. Maybe you're not a Christian and you recognize that the Word of God teaches that God gave His Son for you, that God gave His Son to die, that you might live, and you recognize that there is responsibility for you there to obey the Word of God, be baptized for the remission of your sins. And you've not been keeping with that responsibility. You have this opportunity of today and now to do what God has commanded you to do out of fear and respect for Him. And if you are a child of God, if you're a Christian, then again, you've been awakened to the fact something from the Word of God has made you realize that I have not been living my life as one who has an eternal purpose. And you've been awakened to the fact that you have been living your life for this world, in this world, as if you were a part of this world. And you recognize, you know what? I need to do something. I need to obey, whether that's through a confession of sin, whether that's through repentance in your heart, whatever it is that you need to do to make things right with your God, whom you fear, and who you know whom you ought to obey. If there's anything that we can do for anyone this morning, we ask you might come forward now and make your request known as we stand and sing.